I shall be satisfied when I awake. Welcome back to the Hackberry House, a daily podcast devoted to the Word of God and the persecuted church of North Korea. My name is Bob. This is podcast number 203. It's July 1, 2015. I wonder what it will be like to see God, to see His face. Job believed he would see God one day. Is that your hope, too? Let's rejoin Charles Spurgeon in the message he preached on May 20, 1855, over in England, called The Hope of Future Bliss. This is part two. But now, secondly, the matter of this passage. And here we will dive into the very depths of it, God helping us. For without the Spirit of God, I feel I am utterly unable to speak to you. I have not those gifts and talents which qualify men to speak. Otherwise, I would stand like other men and have nothing to say. May that be given me, for without it I am dumb. As for the matter of this verse, methinks it contains a double blessing. The first is a beholding. I will behold thy face in righteousness. And the next is a satisfaction. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. Let's begin with the first then. David expected that he should behold God's face. What a vision will that be, my brethren? Have you ever seen God's hand? I've seen it. When sometimes he places it across the sky, darkens it with clouds. I've seen God's hand sometimes when the ears of night drag along the shades of darkness. I've seen his hand when, launching his thunderbolt, his lightning splits the clouds and rends the heavens. Perhaps you've seen it in a gentler fashion, when it pours out the water and sends it rippling along in rills and then rolls into rivers. You've seen it in the stormy ocean, in the sky decked with stars, in the earth gemmed with flowers. There's not a man living who can know all the wonders of God's hand. His creation is so wondrous that it would take more than a lifetime to understand it. Go into the depths of it. Let its minute parts engage your attention. Next, take the telescope and try to see remote worlds. And I can see all God's handiwork. Behold, all his hand? No, not so much as 1/1,000,000th part of the fabric. That mighty hand wherein the callow comets are brooded by the sun, in which the planets roll in majestic orbits. That mighty hand which holds all space and grasps all beings. That mighty hand, who can behold it? Who can behold it? But if such be his hand, what must his face be? You have heard God's voice sometimes. You have trembled. I myself have listened, awestruck, and yet with a marvelous joy when I heard God's voice, like the noise of many waters in the great thunderings. Have you never stood and listened while the earth shook and trembled? The very spheres stopped their music while God spoke with his wondrous, deep bass voice. Yes, you have heard that voice. There's a joy marvelously instinct with love and which enters into my soul whenever I hear the thunder. It is my Father speaking. My heart leaps to hear him, but you never heard God's loudest voice. It was but the whisper when the thunder rolled. But if such be the voice, what must it be to behold his face? David said, I will behold thy face. It is said of the temple of Diana that it was so splendidly decorated with gold and so bright and shining that a porter at the door always said to everyone that entered, take heed to your eyes, take heed to your eyes. You'll be struck with blindness unless you take heed to your eyes. But oh, that view of glory, that great appearance, the vision of God. To see him face to face, to enter into heaven, and to see the righteous, shining, brightest stars in the firmament. But best of all, to catch a glimpse of the eternal throne. Ah, there be sits, 'twere almost blasphemy for me to attempt to describe him. How infinitely far my poor words fall below the mighty subject, but to behold God's face, I will not speak of the luster of those eyes, or the majesty of those lips, that shall speak words of love and affection, but to behold his face. You who have dived into the Godhead's deepest sea and have been lost in its immensity, you can tell a little of it. You naughty ones who have lived in heaven these 1,000 years, perhaps you know, but you cannot tell what it is to see his face. We must each of us go there. We must be clad with immortality. We must go above the blue sky and bathe in the river of life. We must outsoar the lightning and rise above the stars to know what it is to see God's face. Words cannot set it forth. And so there I leave it. The hope the psalmist had was that he might see God's face. But there was a peculiar sweetness mixed with this joy, because he knew that he should behold God's face in righteousness. I shall behold thy face in righteousness. Have I not seen my Father's face here below? Yes, I have, through a glass, darkly. But has not the Christian sometimes beheld him when in his heavenly moments, earth is gone and the mind is stripped of matter? There are some reasons and seasons when the gross materialism dies away, and when the ethereal fire within blazes up so high that it almost touches the fire of heaven. There are seasons when in some retired spot, calm and free from all earthly thought, we have put our shoes from off our feet, because the place whereon we stood was holy ground. We have talked with God. Even as Enoch talked with him, so has the Christian held intimate communion with his Father. He's heard his love whispers, he's told out his heart, poured out his sorrows and his groans before him. But after all, he has felt that he has not beheld his face in righteousness. There was so much sin to darken the eyes, so much folly, so much frailty. We could not get a clear prospect of our Jesus. But here the psalmist says, I will behold thy face in righteousness. When that illustrious day shall arise and I shall see my Savior face to face, I shall see him in righteousness. The Christian in heaven will not have so much as a speck upon his garment. He'll be pure and white. Yea, on the earth he is pure through Jesus' blood and white as angels are. But in heaven that whiteness shall be more apparent. Now it is sometimes smoked by earth and covered with the dust of this poor carnal world, but in heaven he'll have brushed himself, washed his wings, made them clean. And then he will see God's face in righteousness. My God, I believe I shall stand before thy face as pure as thou art thyself. For I shall have the righteousness of Jesus Christ. There shall be upon me the righteousness of a God. I shall behold thy face in righteousness. Oh, Christian, canst thou enjoy this, though I cannot speak about it? Dost thy heart meditate upon it? To behold his face forever, to bask in that vision. True, thou canst not understand it, but thou mayest guess the meaning. To behold his face in righteousness. The second blessing, upon which I will be brief, is satisfaction. He will be satisfied, the psalmist says, when he wakes up in God's likeness. Satisfaction. Another joy for the Christian when he shall enter heaven. Here we are never thoroughly satisfied. True, the Christian is satisfied from himself. He has that within which is a wet spring of comfort, and he can enjoy solid satisfaction. But heaven is the home of true and real satisfaction. When the believer enters heaven, I believe his imagination will be thoroughly satisfied. All he has ever thought of, he will there see. Every holy idea will be solidified. Every mighty conception will become a reality. Every glorious imagination will become a tangible thing that he can see. His imagination will not be able to think of anything better than heaven. And should he sit down through eternity, he would not be able to conceive of anything that should outshine the luster of that glorious city. His imagination will be satisfied. Then his intellect will be satisfied. Then shall I see and hear and know all I desired or wished below. Who is satisfied with his knowledge here? Are there not secrets we want to know? Depths in the arena of nature that we have not entered? But in that glorious state we shall know as much as we want to know. The memory will be satisfied. We'll look back upon the vista of past years. We shall be content with whatever we endured or did or suffered on earth. There, on a green and flowery mound, my wearied soul shall sit and with transporting joys recount the labors of my feet. Hope will be satisfied if there be such a thing in heaven. We shall hope for a future eternity and believe in it, but we shall be satisfied as to our hopes continually. And the whole man will be so content that there will not remain a single thing in all of God's dealings that he would wish to have altered. Yea, perhaps I say a thing at which some of you will demur, but the righteous in heaven will be quite satisfied, yes, with the damnation of the lost. I used to think that if I could see the lost in hell, surely I must weep for them. Surely I hear their horrid wailings and I see the dreadful contortions of their anguish. Surely I must pity them, but there is no such sentiment as that known in heaven. The believer shall be there so satisfied with all God's will that he will quite forget the lost in the idea that God has done it for the best, that even their loss has been their own fault, that he has infinitely been just in it. If my parents could see me in hell, they would not have a tear to shed for me, though they were in heaven, for they would say, "It is justice, thou great God, and thy justice must be magnified, as well as thy mercy." Moreover, they would feel that God was so much above his creatures that they would be satisfied to see those creatures crushed, if it might increase God's glory. Oh, in heaven, I believe we shall think rightly of men. Here, men seem great things to us, but in heaven, they will seem no more than a few creeping insects that are swept away and plowing a field for harvest. They will appear no more than a tiny handful of dust, or like some nest of wasps that ought to be exterminated for the injury they have done. They will appear such little things when we sit on high with God and look down on the nations of the earth as grasshoppers and count the isles as very little things. We shall be satisfied with everything. There will not be a single thing to complain of. I shall be satisfied. And that was part two of the Charles Spurgeon message, The Hope of Future Bliss. We finish this up tomorrow as Mr. Spurgeon reminds us that in just a little while, we'll all be gone from here. We ought to be making preparations, don't you think? Remember Psalm 17:15, I shall be satisfied when I awake. We'll talk more tomorrow.